the latest from the Shuttle Atlantis and the International Space Station. I'm Pete Combs, and this is Aero News. It's Wednesday, September 13th, 2006. Now that Atlantis is finally in space after five aborted launch attempts, everything else seems to be going remarkably well. That includes Tuesday's epic spacewalk at the International Space Station, where two Atlantis astronauts began the complex task of setting up a huge solar array on a 17.5-ton truss that had been erected the day before by the shuttle's robotic arm. CBS News radio correspondent Peter King is standing by now in Orlando with more.
Well, Pete, it went better than just very well. Astronauts Heidi Stephanishin Piper and Joe Tanner were ahead of schedule all day long. I mean, 2 hours out of the gate, they were 45 minutes in front of the timeline, and they wound up being, an hour even, maybe even a little bit more than an hour ahead of schedule by the time they finished up. And I think the ironic thing about all of this is the fact that, you know, leading up to the mission managers, the astronauts, you know, even the people who sell food were all telling us that these were going to be, the most difficult spacewalks, the most difficult timeline ever, the most complicated mission ever. And then Tanner and Piper come off and just pull off an amazingly efficient, well-done spacewalk. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Let's talk a little bit about what was accomplished here, because this was an incredible feat. They put 17.5 tons of material together here.
Right, and that actually started before they were even in their spacesuits and getting ready to head out the hatch. Over in the International Space Station, astronaut Jeff Williams, who's the flight engineer for the station, and astronaut Steve McClain, who's one of the shuttle crew members, were operating the space station's huge robot arm, Canada Arm 2, and they lifted that 17.5-ton solar truss into place, latched it into place with a great series of robotic moves, and made sure that it was ready for the astronauts to work on and make all the connections. So that preceded it. The astronauts step out of the airlock. Their big job today, they had to loosen a number of restraint bolts and other bolts holding solar panel boxes in place and that sort of thing. They had to hook up somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 umbilicals that provide electric power to the heaters aboard that solar truss, because you need to keep those electronic components from freezing up, and they are working against the clock. Every indication we have so far is that everything they've done has worked, and it's certainly a good day for NASA.
Sounds like it. In fact, once they finally got this mission off the ground, it sounds like it's been an excellent mission, especially given the condition of the heat shield.
Last night, mission managers decided that there would be no need for an extra inspection on the next flight day, so they will instead proceed on as they had planned, doing a spacewalk on Wednesday rather than doing another in-flight inspection. That's how good the heat shield looks, and they're talking about data that came on the flight day 2 inspection. They're talking about the pictures that were taken as the shuttle did its back over flip, the RPM maneuver, as it's so-called. The pictures that were taken from the station were very high-resolution digital photographs, and they're talking about the general video that was looked at after launch, the ascent video from ground-and-air cameras that that they've been checking. Everything so far seems to check out just perfectly for the heat shield, and you couldn't ask for better news.
We'll hear more from CBS News radio correspondent Peter King in just a moment. But first, this Aerocast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V-220 and V-300T engines.
How smart is the engine in your aircraft? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as smart and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services and their state-of-the-art engine management system. Both the V220 and the V300T feature a fully redundant and certified engine management system that controls all engine operation parameters. This EMS includes a true FADEC that manages propeller pitch and other elements of engine operation not usually controlled by the EMS in piston aircraft engines. The EMS automatically provides an optimum fuel mix by constantly measuring the manifold pressure, ambient pressure, engine speed, and throttle positioning, and calculating the appropriate fuel injection timing for each cycle and cylinder. The AES V220 and V300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh, so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at theaircraftengine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature, an update on the current shuttle mission with CBS News radio correspondent Peter King. Peter, things seem to be going so well at this point that, as you said, they're a day ahead, really. They don't have to do that extra inspection, so that means they can pull away from the International Space Station on Sunday, and that is what, that's as planned?
Well, not necessarily what they want to do. They still have that built-in contingency day in case something goes wrong when they try to open up the solar arrays on Thursday. And that is a big if because, yeah, the first EVA is under their belt, but there's still two EVAs to go, Wednesday and Friday, and Thursday in between, unfurling those solar wings. So the bottom line is everything stays on schedule as is, and they continue to follow the flight plan as is.
Did they lose much in terms of having to go to a Saturday launch? There was talk about they were going to have to shorten the mission itself because they just are backed up against that Soyuz launch.
They didn't have to shorten the mission at all. What they found was that they could still fly a full mission, maybe leaving the International Space Station just a little bit earlier than expected, but not that much because they could still be docked while the Soyuz is launched. They just can't be there while the Soyuz is there.
I got it. All right. Now, as far as the station itself is concerned, the solar blankets, if you will, are being unfurled after this truss is completed and everything's hooked up. I would take it that this will provide a great deal more power for further expansion of the station.
Oh, these solar arrays are huge. First of all, they extend nearly the length of a football field, and these solar arrays will basically double the amount of electricity coming into the International Space Station. And you're right, that's going to be very important because the remaining add-ons, things like the European and Japanese laboratory modules, some more living space, and other equipment that will eventually be added onto the space station, all needs electricity. So this will essentially double the amount of power they have right now and enable the station to operate at full strength.
The shuttle themselves are back on track? Do we feel like we're beyond the issue of falling foam, at least for the time being?
Well, I don't want to say we're beyond the issue of falling foam, because that's still a concern, obviously, and we talked about the photography that was taken after launch and all that, but it certainly appears that they are on the right track. But again, you know, you have to develop a trend, and this is only the second flight since last year. Two flights does not make a trend, but two flights certainly does show them that they're on the right track. They are still redesigning the tank to get rid of the ice frost ramp area, that spot that was characterized as probable and catastrophic for failure sometime during the shuttle program. That will be done in time to fly next year. And I think they have one more flight left this year that would be on the old design tank. But again, you know, we watched the post-launch video very, very carefully and in slow motion downstairs in the TV room. And the only debris we saw come off the tank was very, very small, and nothing came off at a time during when it would have hurt the shuttle, those first 2 minutes and 15 seconds or so, I guess.
Right. All right, so we have one more launch this year, and then we get into next year's schedule, and obviously everything is at a very quick pace now because they want to complete the International Space Station. Is there a point in time where we might see an expansion of the ISS crew?
That's not going to happen for at least a couple more years, but yeah, they will expand from 3 to 6. I believe 2029 or 2010 was the operative date for that. And the reason being, yeah, you'll have the room for the crew, but you also have to have enough spacecraft to function as escape vehicles for them. You can't have 6 people up there with just 1 3-person Soyuz. So that probably won't happen for another 4 years. But at this point, they're talking about a definite date for that to happen, as opposed to a few years ago where we were saying, well, down the road they'll expand. Now they have a more definite idea.
Oh, good. So to summarize then, it seems like the current spacewalk went very well. 2 more EVAs still ahead for this Atlantis STS-115 mission. And as far as the space station is concerned, after what, 3.5 years, we're now back in business of building the space station.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where NASA wants to be right now. That deadline is September of 2010. This is the first of 18 remaining shuttle flights. 17 of them will go to the International Space Station. 15 of those total are expected to be construction flights. And again, as you and I have talked about before, this one has to work perfectly, and then everyone behind it has to fall into place like pieces of a puzzle.
Well, Peter, thanks very much. CBS News radio correspondent Peter King in Orlando. I appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you again, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Pete.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Pete Combs. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the airport.